Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Cool. Wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong.
Las Culturistas calling.
Wow, I can barely get that out, bitch.
Oh, my God. First of all, we should say this is our first post-op episode of Las Cults. And we have Matt Rogers here with us, and he is he is being a trooper duper, well, supersonic racer.
I wanted to be here for our guests because this is a capital G guest, but I do want to update everyone that it went really well, and all my doctors and everything were super happy about how it went, and thank you everyone that reached out and was so sweet and was so nice. And you guys really kept me going. And also what kept me going was that someone made that filter, that Lost Culch top 200 filter.
Oh my God.
That was so fun. But it did go great. And right now I've just got a full on splint on my nose. So if I sound a little nasal, it's just because I'm working with some extra gear today. But you know, we're soldiering on.
Some extra gear. Thank you so much to Katie K. Nats on
Katie.
Instagram for making that filter. I love that she made the choice to keep it. Obviously, she can't do all 200. That would be insane. It's top 50. And so you're not going to get a bad result.
No flops.
Because we're working in the top quartile there, you know?
Yeah. So that kind of kept me, I would say a few things kind of kept me going since this happened.
Fearless Taylor's version.
Well, oh my God, four. Fearless Taylor's version, which I know you've been gagging.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Bowen Yang as the iceberg on SNL.
Oh my God.
And my mother is here.
Katri.
She's currently run over there. She's in the
you kitchen. Have to bring her on the mic for one second.
Mom, Katrina. Come over here for a second. Because actually there is some news, which is I got her to be a big Drag Race fan.
Oh, you guys mainlined all of season 13. Hi, Katrina.
She's coming in. This is her podcast debut. So, Mom, say who you like on Drag Race season 13 into the mic.
Rosé.
You love Rosé.
Okay, we like Rosé.
Simone. And
Gottmik. So can you believe?
My God.
And she's been saying that since the beginning.
So she knew top three.
Yeah.
The top three. I mean, Candy, we love Candy, but Candy is maybe like the controversial wild card pick.
Yeah.
Would you agree, Mom?
Yeah. Oh, that would be definitely controversial.
You know,
a little drag.
Well, I even said when I was on Twitter, back on Twitter for like 3 days, I said, I love this top four. And then people were getting in my replies being like, Candy doesn't deserve to be. I was like, all right, everybody, calm down. So we're over here saying that we love
Candy. We are Candy Muse fans.
We're Candy Muse fans, but, but Katrina is not. No.
I liked Denali.
That's
and you
perfect.
Liked La La Ri.
Oh, I loved La La Ri.
And
beautiful.
La La Ri. You know what my mom was loving about La La Ri? The looks.
Oh. Until the bags. Until the bags, of course. But
like
the looks were otherwise
look.
Great.
No.
No, Katrina.
Wait,
what are you saying?
Olivia.
Oh, she
Olivia.
Likes Olivia Lux,
she liked
too.
Olivia. That's
she likes
fun.
Olivia,
Olivia was the one that was really beautiful. But La La Ri had some stunning outfits on.
Stunning outfits.
Yeah, the
and
ones
charisma.
That she brought with her, that they were really cute. She just couldn't get
then
that bag look
bag
together.
Thing, boop.
She goes boop and does a cut it motion.
Just
cut
make
it,
sure
cut
he
it.
Takes it a little easy today.
Okay.
Oh, we're gonna make sure he takes it very easy. Of course,
and
Katrina.
Bowen, awesome with the ice cream.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Katrina.
I loved it.
Thank you.
And
you're
that's Clark.
That's Clark. We're gonna bring him in later.
I have to be quiet, but hi.
Oh yes. No, this is you can. Yeah.
I love moms. Hi, mom.
This is the first cameo of a Lost Cult.
This is already a huge episode.
Yeah, well,
Katrina's such a saint for taking care of you, and
sure.
And we're not even gonna put her on the spot and make her say the catchphrase. We all know what the catchphrase is.
No, damn bird. Can you shout it from the kitchen, mom?
Bird.
Damn bird. What? Oh, now she's yelling at me because I'm talking too loud. Okay, so this is you have to understand this has been the vibe in the house. It's not
she's
clean enough in the
mother.
Apartment. Yeah, very that. Please, okay, your cameo's over now.
Oh!
All right.
The boundary is
See, a small taste of the spotlight, and this is how they get these young
girls. Well...
How you doing, girl? Before we bring in the guest, I want to take a temperature check on the girl.
I won't keep you very long in this you know, pre-show space, pre-intro space. I'm doing okay. I just... I'm so embarrassed. We're having to start a little late because... I'm still just a little too busy for my taste, which I know,
well, you know,
is part of Bo and Yang is tired culture. I know, but
busy with your many jobs.
No. I'm just, you know, I did not plan this, in the way that I should have. And so it's sort of on me.
No. You're going to have a restful summer.
Yes, that's true. I hope so. Well, here's someone who gave me a true breath of fresh air and a ray of light over last summer. Ugh. Is our guest.
Yes. I mean, this is a bomb indeed.
Well, it's funny you should say that.
It is.
Because he has a wonderful podcast called Soul Balm. We've both had the privilege of being guests.
It was a privilege.
He wants to go for this vibe. It's very much a Super Soul Sunday vibe for us. But of course, we're never going to be big enough to go to Oprah.
No.
It was, I felt like I was Miss Markle. Felt like... Without you know, digging up the for anything, without dredging up any controversy, but
yeah, I felt like I was Meghan Markle if I didn't have as much conflict as her.
Exactly,
you know what I mean? Like sort of a low conflict Meghan Markle is how I felt when I went on the podcast.
You know, if you were Meghan Markle, but you Googled your damn boyfriend.
Yeah, hello. By the way, I don't think so, honey.
I think
Googled Prince Harry before she married a prince. Okay, Googled.
She Googled.
The girl Googled.
I think our guest is truly fantastic. You've seen him in Love, Simon, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, babe. Glee,
projects.
Even.
I watched his human rights campaign speech when I was trying to write mine, and mine came out a clunker, but his is perfect in every way. Ooh, baby.
Just like him.
Everyone, please welcome into your ears...
Clark Moore!
Y'all, I'm gonna cry.
It's too early.
That was the nicest intro I've ever gotten. It is such an honor to be here.
Oh no.
Don't be crying now. Now, Clark, how are you right now, vibe-wise? Because I think this is perfect. This is a perfect sort of meeting of our guest with the vibe on Lost Culture right now, which is a little bit more sedate. It's a little bit slower. Mm. It's a little bit more soothing. I think because Matt is having to sort of keep a low lid on the vocal energy, which is normally his trademark.
Matt is literally healing.
Yes.
And my show is all about healing, about emotional healing. Yeah,
yes.
I'm happy to bring the good vibes here.
It's why I knew I had to be there. You know, the thing is, though, when I see you, I smile too big. And when I smile too big, my stitches rip open.
No!
And then I have to go get another procedure.
No, he's joking.
No. I'm kidding.
Okay, good. Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I mean, to answer your question, I'm fine. I'm, you know, ups and downs. But generally, I think I'm in a similar vibe to what Matt has been saying on the pod the past couple of episodes about sort of getting into a stasis and then trying not to go too high or too low and just kind of being in that placid state day to day, which is nice. Yeah.
Has it been like a sustained static thing for the whole pandemic? Are we talking about a more recent local stretch of time?
I think there were times in the early part where I allowed myself to get taken on rides every single day, you know, and like you open your, I mean, obviously right now, I've only read his name. I've not said his name out loud, so I can't think of it. Dante Wright. Thank you,
Dante
Simone.
Wright.
Also, by the way, I brought people with me because
I love
our man has an entourage.
I brought the full entourage. I brought my producer, Simone. I brought my intern, Sally. I didn't bring them. They both said, we are coming because we love this show so much. And I said, who am I?
Good energy.
I will not get between you two and Bowen and Matt. I won't do it. So they're here.
No, we welcome Sally we and love Simone. Them.
But yeah, so like I think in the earlier part, I would have allowed myself to go on a journey, an emotional journey of like yet another unarmed Black man being killed by the police who can't seem to figure out if it's a taser or a gun that they're holding, you know.
Maybe they shouldn't be a police. Maybe they shouldn't be a police officer if they can't tell the difference. Interesting.
Like base level, you know. And also, it's so funny you would say that, Bowen, about like, I mean, it's so funny for us to be talking about this now because on your episode of Soul Bomb, we talked about Elijah McClain.
I was listening to this talk between John Early and Dr. Catherine Liu at UC Santa Cruz. This is so random. But she said this thing where she was like, you know, we're not going to get rid of like racial biases in our lifetime. So the thing that we all have to focus on now is like the fact that there are racists who can hurt you and there are racists who can't. Mm-hmm. And it's like she was talking about how she was like, she's in an interracial marriage and she was in like Europe somewhere at a bus stop, and then this like woman was sneering at them, clearly taking issue with the fact that they were interracial, and then Dr. Liu's husband got a little stressed out, but then Dr. Liu just goes, well, what am I gonna do, like tell this woman off that I'm never gonna see again? I mean, of course it's like a crazy, that's like a really tense, maybe dangerous situation in the moment, but it's like, just save the exertion, the emotional labor, let's say, anything mm-hmm. that has to do with like stirring you into action, save that for the forces and the institutions and the structures, whatever, mm-hmm. that have the potential to harm people. Like, that's what it is. That's kind of helped me with a lot of, like, as a way of looking at a lot of stuff like this. I'm sorry, I went on this huge tangent. But.
No, that's exactly the space that I'm living in, because we actually just, to bring it back around, I promise I won't plug the pod every single time I speak today.
Yes, girl, plug it.
The girls should be listening to it.
I will say the most recent episode that we put out, I think last week, was with this psychologist named Dr. Marielle Bouquet, and she is a specialist in intergenerational trauma and sort of like mindfulness. She's a little bit in that holistic woo-woo space paired mm-hmm. with the credentials of a doctorate in psychology from Columbia, okay?
That's what makes it not so woo-woo, because she got the doctorate, yeah.
We love it, okay?
From an Ivy, even.
We have sources, we have citations. But she talked about how we, you know, we've normalized so many of these things, whether it's even just, you know, putting a mask on our face, but the body doesn't process it that way. The body is mm-hmm. still processing all of these little things that we've come to normalize about the pandemic, about racial trauma, about whatever, in a fight or flight way, because it's the only way that we're programmed to respond to these things. And so just because up here or like in our outward facing world, mm-hmm. we think we're okay, if we're not actively doing something, and that can be a sound bath, it can be watching a television show, it can be reading, you know, it can be talking to your sister, like, but it has to be a conscious choice where you sit down and you say, this is the medicine that I'm taking to heal myself from whatever experience you had that day. And if you aren't doing that, then it's storing in your body and it will come out in other ways.
I feel like you two are like, you so carry the light. Like, if you know that expression, like you really do, like you just have this like energy about you, which is just, you do make people feel better. Like something that I think everyone would want to say about themselves, I can say about you, which is like, after you have an experience with you, you feel better than you did before. Oh. And so like that, but I feel that that's true. And so I don't know about you, but for me, like if I'm ever feeling useful or like productive in the world, it has to be really connected to my joy. So like, and I kind of get that vibe from you as well, that like, do you feel like you're more productive, creative, like useful when you are feeling joyful, or do you like sort of create from strife?
I would say it has to be purpose driven for me. Like,
I gotcha.
We are Pisces, right?
Yes, we are
Pisces,
we are sister.
So
I'm going to Scorpio King.
A lot of water here. A lot of water.
Dripping wet.
But I'm in the, it's almost like To stay in this woo-woo space, my rising is Gemini.
Okay.
So my front facing is very social and very light and very, you know, like social butterfly. I bounce around. I make people feel good. But mm-hmm. in my sort of like behind the scenes, I'm diving into the depths of the darkness.
Gotcha.
And I sort of think of it as like, I'm doing that so you don't have to.
Oh,
you know,
right.
I have built up a tolerance for it. I know how to navigate there and I know how to turn that into something productive or creative for myself. And then I can sort of be, I mean, of course, I live for the Oprah comparison. It's the aspiration of my entire life. I can sort of be the guide through the darkness and we can walk through it together. But my whole thesis statement for life is wanting to make people feel better. And this thing that my dad used to say, the director of the performing arts camp that I used to go to that like made me fall in love with performance. They both used to say and still say, always leave places and people better than you found them. And that means, you know, cleaning up the table after you leave at the food court in the mall. That was
especially
the lesson.
Especially that.
You know, that was where my dad taught it to me.
These filth queens leaving the food courts like a zoo.
Mm-hmm. And not if you're walking down the street, you know, you see some trash on the sidewalk, like, why not pick it up and throw it away? It's little things like that.
I feel crazy when I do that, but I do that. Like now, even in LA where it's just like a truly lost cause in terms of how dirty it is. Yeah. Like I'll be like, oh, this cup, like, like it's a public park, but I think it helps.
But I mean, it's so funny that you say that because even as soon as we brought you in, you pointed out the fact that Matt is healing. It just means that you are attuned to that idea. Wait, I have such a frivolous question, but what's your moon? What's your moon sign?
I'm double Pisces, girl.
Oh,
sun
girl.
And moon.
That same. I'm double. Pisces rising, Cancer moon.
So ooh, he's triple water placement.
I'm about to cry at any. Moments.
It's beautiful. I love it about him. Clark, I just think that you probably provided me with like a real sense of groundedness over the summer with that interview because I was like, you really like had me talking in a way that I would never open up to most people, that not even my therapist. I was like, okay, he's got me. And I will
tell the readers what it is. What is it?
What? No, I mean,
tell the readers what the interview was.
The interview was on Soul Bomb. It was just, we were just talking about, if I remember correctly, I brought up conversion therapy. I brought up forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I brought up like all these things.
You probably don't know this unless you've listened to the pod recently, but there's a really great
I know. I have
clip.
Listened recently.
Okay. Oh, okay,
and,
good.
And I'm truly honored that my soundbite is in there.
Oh, good. I'm glad you feel that way.
I'm like, God, you know, he got that out of me, that Clark.
I mean, I was shook by it because we really, also speaking to the, you know, the podcast has been healing for me, but it's also a lot of work, as y'all know. Putting out an hour of content a week is a lot. And
it's not nothing, yeah.
It's not nothing. And it's more that it's constant. And the way that we run our show, because my producer Simone is like a proper late night producer. Thank God we don't do pre-interviews. That would be too much. But we do extensive research beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also do a heavy edit because I want to give space to, to sort of sit in silence even, or, you know, not to feel like you have to speak. And so a lot of times the interviews will be really slow and then we'll come back in and we'll just sort of like, the same thing with Matt's interview. I told you there was a section at the end where I was like, for whatever reason, I was like going for it. I just kept going back to the same point. And I was like, I feel like we got it. And so then we pulled out a whole 5-minute chunk where I was just asking the same question over and over and over. Anyway, all this to say that it's a lot of work and it's a lot of emotional labor as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm really sitting in that space with the guest, which is nice and it can be healing. But specifically, Bowen, your interview, I just found it so, I said this to you then, and I'll say it again, generous, the way that you think back on specifically conversion therapy and the relationship that you have with your parents. And I was asking you about forgiveness, your practice of forgiveness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because I want to develop one and because I have a lot of resentments. She can hold a grudge, you know? I'm going to hold a grudge on this towing truck that has decided to...
No, you don't forgive that.
No, me too.
Okay. There's a Subaru on the back of the truck, and for whatever reason, it's right outside my window.
Ugh.
But what you said was, it's forgiveness is a practice, and it seems like it's going to be impossible. And then you do it, and then you're like, oh, I did it. And then you just keep doing it.
The whole point of forgiveness is that your brain is telling you, you have no reason to do that. You have no reason to forgive someone. Not to get like biblical even, but like, yeah, that's kind of the whole, not virtue of it. It's just like, it's irrational. Like forgiveness is irrational. I want to ask you, but you're saying like it is emotional labor. What are you doing to release that? Like, what are you doing? Like, what's your sound bath? What's your TV show? What's your what?
For a while, I've also had to switch it up, you know, because you get into a habit and you sort of, so I'm actually dry at the moment. I know. At the top of quarantine, I was dry for a while. And then I was like, what am I doing? And then I was smoking weed like every day for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then a couple weeks ago, two, three, or maybe 4 weeks ago, I stopped and have replaced it with bedtime reading, which has been really nice. And I read Detransition Baby by Tori Peters.
Oh my God.
Have y'all read this?
I stopped like a third of the way through, but I was just like, this is so sexy and hot. And I love everything about this.
It was not good nighttime reading because it's a page turner and it's very like, it gets you sort of going. But I read that last week and enjoyed it. I watch everything. I'm watching every, like all of the...
That's not possible. But
there's
but
a lot ahead. Of things.
There's a lot of things.
So I made notes of what I watched this weekend.
Okay.
Ooh.
So I watched Thunder Force.
Okay.
What did you think?
I thought it was so funny.
Great.
I am very Melissa McCarthy girl. I love Octavia Spencer.
I love Octavia.
And I love their press narrative over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, they were friends, like they were years friends. And years when ago,
right? Yes. They were auditioning together like for like under fives and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, they're like old school Hollywood friends. Mm-hmm. Octavia's like friends with Melissa's parents, you know, like true friendship. And that layer of the narrative added, I thought it was funny.
And they were up against each other at the Oscars when Octavia won.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Crazy. Yeah. I also rewatched Frances Ha.
Oh, great.
Which I love. I'm sort of
love
in like
Noah.
Love Noah, love Greta.
Love Greta.
Of course, it's very white, but still very good.
Yeah.
One of the great films of white cinema.
One of the great white films, Frances Ha.
Yes.
Black and white and white.
Yes.
Speaking of white people, y'all should watch the Netflix documentary about the college admission scandal.
I watched that.
Did you watch it? Oh my God.
I did.
Sudi and I tried to start it. And then once it got to like the recreated, like the recreation, I was like, no, I'm out.
I had doubts too about the recreations, but it actually, by the end, it's kind of good because you realize just how ridiculous some of the conversations that these parents were having. Like like once it gets into the real thick of it, like, and you're actually hearing real transcripts acted out of the way people talk about their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like this one woman that's like, the thing is, you know, we're dealing with my younger daughter and she's so much smarter than my older daughter. Like my older daughter was never going to ask questions about this, but my younger daughter isn't stupid like my older daughter.
That was so good. I loved that when she dragged her kids.
Crazy.
Yeah. And then you realize like eventually like the kids are going to find out that you did this. And that they even say in the thing, like, you know, I think while the parents would say they were thinking about their kids when they did this, like they were really not.
Right.
No. Yeah. I watched it and same thing, but when I was like, these reenactments are going to be brutal.
They were, they seemed like they were going to be tacky. Yeah.
And then I was like, you know what, girl, you get your COVID check. Okay, I have said yes to some things I would not have said yes to a year and a half ago. Okay, I'm like, you do what you gotta. You read that transcript. I would be like, you want me to say what? Okay, sure. Point me. Where's the camera?
Matthew Modine, darling. Okay. A starring
Matthew,
role.
That's right. I was like, yeah, Matthew. Sorry. Go ahead and keep going. And then what else? What else have we consumed?
I weirdly had an emotional reaction to Godzilla versus Kong. Which I watched yesterday.
Emotional reaction, extreme anger?
No, I cried.
Beautiful.
What girl?
Okay, so...
First of all, who do you identify with?
Well, it's... It wasn't actually... Have y'all seen it?
Yes. I have not. I'm dying to.
Okay, so how can we not spoil the film?
You can spoil. I have a feeling. I kind of know what the spoiler is. I feel like I will love it no matter what. I really love those movies.
So the thing that made me cry is a little bit of a spoiler in that it opens up a plot device, but it's not any like big spoilers.
Reader, if you're listening, you haven't seen it, skip ahead, let's say 5 minutes. We'll give you a specific time signature, but yes. Okay, great. Sorry, keep going, Clark.
So basically around 30 minutes, there's this little girl who has like developed a relationship with Kong in the habitat that he's living in. And she is hearing impaired. And you sort of see through the first 30 minutes that she's like has a relationship with him, but you don't really know what it is. And right around minute 30, it is revealed in the most beautiful way that the relationship she has with her is that she can communicate with him through sign language.
Yes.
And the reason why it got me was because it was just such a beautiful narrative that this girl's, I'm literally going to cry, this girl's disability is her superpower. It's a crucial plot device. The only way anyone else can communicate with Kong is through this girl's relationship because of her disability.
Right.
And it was just so like... In this time of representation and the conversations of like shoehorning diversity in and how brutal it is to watch them check boxes, you know, and like for it to be such a thoughtful inclusion and for it to be the main driving crucial plot point, you know,
huge.
Oh, it got me. It got. And then he signs home to her. Oh, my God. It was beautiful.
Oh, my God. Clark.
There was some good stuff in there. I would say, while we're still in spoiler zone, it always irritates me when it's like Godzilla versus Kong, and then at the end, there's no winner because they're both actually good. Like, Godzilla comes in, kills what has to be millions of people, like shooting lasers, like stomping on buildings, doing Godzilla's gig. Like, he comes in fully on game. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, they have a conversation. They speak to one another. And by the way, there's a really good line by Rebecca Hall, which is, we think they have an ancient rivalry. Like, she's just like sort of rifling through drawers trying to find papers or whatever. And she's like, we believe they have an ancient rivalry. And it's like, well, this is just pure camp. And then honestly, maybe I loved it at the end when they spoke to each other and decided that Godzilla would go back to the sea. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
But I guess when you say someone versus someone, there should be a winner. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
I mean, shouldn't we as an audience be trained around the idea that there will be no, like, you're not going to kill Godzilla or King Kong.
You're so right.
Those are two icons.
Yeah, they can't die. I 100% agree with you. And I feel like, you know, I'm being a little facetious here. I really want them both to live. I love both the girls. Both the girls, they represent so much. It would be like at the end of the podcast if one of us had to die.
We're two icons on their level.
We have to both live. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that as a reader, that's how we feel when you guys talk about the suicide pact that you've created, the Meghan McCain suicide pact, okay? We don't want to lose you.
I really don't think she's coming on, so no, I think we're okay. I think that she is denied
crazier
the request.
Things have happened this
crazier
year.
Crazier things have happened. No, I don't think it's in the cards. Wait, Clark, can I ask you another frivolous question, even to undercut how perfectly put you, just what you found so beautiful about this film. Were you stoned when you watched it?
I was not.
Okay.
No.
It was dry at the time. Wow. Okay. Dry. I was on about a pound of edibles.
If I was stoned, I probably would have laughed a lot more. I probably would have like gone on a ride with the visual experience. But because I was sober, actually, not only did I cry more, but in the context of Biden presenting his infrastructure plan, the only thing I could think about was as Godzilla is destroying Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's $1 billion. There's another $2.5 billion. Bro, where are we getting the budget to rebuild Hong Kong?
And if you're taxing my ass, which I'm okay with, I don't want my money going towards a pothole in a white neighborhood. I want that everywhere distributed. Come on.
Okay. Tax them. They're tax ancient. Them. What kind of generational wealth have they developed?
Exactly. Exactly.
Have you been watching The Race?
Girls.
Wow. He said, I watched everything, and he's not watching The Race.
Here's the veil for me. I have not watched. I stopped watching reality television a couple years ago.
Wow.
And this is actually something I know. I really want to talk to you about.
No, I love this. Yes,
I want to hear
us.
Why.
So it was, and you know what's so funny? It was Potomac for me that
really
made me sort of go over the edge. And
Potomac 2 years ago.
Yes, I want to say it was whenever the narrative about Robin and the house and the divorce and not having any money and you know, like the, I don't know, I can't speak to their narratives now, but
it got much worse.
So this is the thing that I have always found so strange, and Potomac I think was what lifted the veil for all the other you know, girls in the franchise for me. I thought it was supposed to be about aspirational wealth, and I thought it was supposed to be about people who had a certain amount of money that either we never would have, or like, isn't it great to see them fail socially because they have money that we're jealous of, you know, or like, isn't it great to see people fight because that's the only way that I can make sense of the fact that they have, you know, this conspicuous consumption that we're watching on television. But then with Potomac, it was like, all these girls are broke. And so I'm like, okay, wait, are these women on the show? And then also with all the other places, you start to see how they become dependent on the income in order to maintain the lifestyle. They go in and they have some amount of wealth that they've accumulated or whatever. And now they have to make their $1 million a year on Real Housewives of Atlanta, or their however many hundreds of thousands a year on whatever other thing. And so many of them start there with the hopes of going somewhere else. I think of a person like Nene.
Yes.
And then that doesn't necessarily pan out in the traditional sense. And so then they have to come back. Anyway, all this to say, and this is what I'm really curious y'all's thoughts are, I've started to feel complicit in really the destruction of these women's lives, because the drama is contrived but real. The divorces are real. The estrangement from their children is real.
Right.
You know, and then like the dependency on this, you know, it's this negative feedback loop that they've sort of seemed to get gotten trapped in.
That makes complete sense to me. I feel like what you're sort of disillusioned by is that this seems like a codependent thing, where it's the network, or it's the network depending on the housewives as talent, and then the housewives depending on the network as a source of income, when it's really a one-way exploitation. And that might have opened your eyes to all of reality TV, or most reality TV, which is also exploitative in that same way. Your 90 Day Fiancés, that's just like that. I feel like that is the prime example, not the prime example, but like Your Hoarders, you're like that kind of thing.
Yeah. 600 Pound Life. Yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting. Like, what I like about the Housewives is, the sort of, ways in which people really say what they feel. And and this is maybe a reach for me to say, but it may have improved how I deal with conflict in my life, because I'm less afraid of what's going to happen if I say what I really think to someone and say what's bothering me, maybe because I've seen it displayed so many times in such bad ways on these shows, but also in such productive ways. But in terms of your thing about, like, it feels like it's not like a symbiotic relationship, like it's them taking. I think it depends who you are. I think if you are someone like, let's say, Jen Shah, on The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, mm-hmm. and you know you are a criminal, and you know you've stolen millions from hundreds of people, working class people, then I don't think you go on a reality show because, yes, your life is going to be destroyed. Right. I think if you're someone like Erica Jane and you know more than you say about what your husband has done, maybe don't go on the reality show. If she right. truly didn't know anything and she thought this is going to be a way to connect myself with a new audience and, you know, I have a music career that I want more people to know about, then maybe that's why she did it. But I think it's like, any person can go out in the world, and going out in the world can go well for you or go badly for you. Mm-hmm. So I think that these people, oh, whether they're delusional or not, they sign up for this opportunity knowing that it can go well for them or badly for right. them. I just think not enough people are realistic enough about how it's going to go for them, but that's what makes them really good reality stars. And I do yeah. think it's fun to watch. And I like you're saying, because they all do have this like wealth they can fall back on, I don't right. really feel bad if someone's daughter is mad at them because they said that the daughter didn't look good in clothes when they went on a reality show and paraded this opinion about. Like, it's to me, it's like a study in like hubris, lack thereof. I think it says something really crazy about America, which mm-hmm. I really like watching. I think it's also a response to the reality shows like that were sort of around in like the early aughts that were all about aspirational wealth. Mm-hmm, like it felt like, you know, The Fabulous Life and like everything was about these rich, rich, rich people. And these shows really bring them down to earth. And yeah. I feel like watching that happen is cathartic a little bit. That being said, I also know that a little bit of what I'm saying is like, no, it's still good. I'm fine. And what you're saying is right. It's why I avoided it for so long. It's why I never got into it for so long, because I was like, the last thing you could get me to watch is The Housewives. Right. And then I actually think it's some of the better reality TV that's out there, to be honest.
But do you feel like, Clark, that there's a reality TV shaped hole in your consumption? Or are you just like, no, I'm good. Like, there's plenty of stuff to watch.
Well, it's also paired with the time. You know, we uh-huh. have so many scripted series now, and you couldn't possibly watch everything. So I do sometimes feel out of the conversation. And so in those times, I'll try to I guess it's more of a docuseries, but I did watch Tiger King. Uh-huh.
Which I guess was it's more like, of a docuseries. The biggest compliment ever.
I guess it's more of a docuseries.
But that similarly, I felt so like dirty watching that. Yeah.
That was filth.
I will say I did watch and I really enjoyed Selling Sunset. And the uh-huh. reason I did was because I was loving your episodes about it. And I just was like, I don't get it, but I want to engage in this conversation. So I will sometimes dive in, but usually I'm just trying to create some distance.
Sure. And for Selling Sunset, there is some, not exception to this this idea around reality that I think you're sort of holding in a very nuanced understanding way, but it's that it doesn't feel like these people are being exploited, with the exception right. of like what's her face, Davina.
Right. Like, well, especially yeah, yeah. knowing the context of Adam, what is his name, Adam DeVillo, Adam the
oh yeah,
creator.
The guy, the Hills guy.
Yes, yeah, who did The Hills and Laguna. And so knowing, uh-huh. I guess this is also sort of part of what I'm saying about reality television in general, is like being at a point now where every class of person, not socioeconomic class, but every like new class of housewives mm-hmm. or, you know, TV show, or whatever, these are all people who have all watched some version of yes. reality television. Yes. We're not yeah. getting people who have no idea. We're not getting, what was her name on season one of Real Housewives of Atlanta? She only lasted one season and she was so sweet.
I don't know, Atlanta.
Deshaun. Maybe it was Deshaun. And she wrote like a $15,000 tithing check in her mega church on like the second episode of the show. You know, you're not getting people who have no idea what they're getting yeah, into anymore. Right. You're getting people like Davina, exactly, who mm-hmm. are going on to this with some like wacko idea of like, this is how I'm going to create my narrative on this show.
When she tried to sell that $150 million house or whatever, girl, that was... I hope we can continue to follow that narrative. And also, in a way, you have seen drag because you've seen Christine on Selling Sunset. So your Drag Race quotient is sort of filled there.
Yeah.
It may be time now as we talk...
I'm in the Drag Race canon. I don't know how I haven't mentioned this. Do you know this?
Wait. Go on.
So Alex, one of my best friends, Alex Newell, my good Judy.
Oh, yes. My God, Alex
was
Newell.
On... celebrity.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Of course. Of course.
And that was the roast episode.
Yes. And there's, was it? I actually,
it doesn't matter. Okay.
It was Alex and two other people competing for money for charity.
Yes.
And Alex got Bob the drag queen, as a mentor. And they all had like, once they got into drag, they had to show their friends and family and whatever. And so I am on Alex's iPhone. My Chiron was Alex's friend.
Oh,
and it is in
God.
My IMDb credits. I don't know who put it there, but thank you.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, there I am.
Clark
on Alex's
Moore,
phone.
Alex, not himself, not self, Alex's friend.
Exactly.
Very distinguished.
You were playing the role.
I was playing the role, yeah.
We must know the answer that you have to our question that we ask every single guest, and this is truly the moment.
Yeah.
Which is, Clark, what was the culture that made you say culture was for you?
This is so hard to answer, and of course I've thought about it at length. I think about it every single episode, and it gives me a little bit of an anxiety attack because I'm like, what am I going to say? The reason why it's hard for me to answer, though, is because a theme that I've sensed in a number of your guests is certainly as they've become performers or like known performers, there is a shift where they feel like it's something they do alone, privately for themselves, at home, in their community theater or whatever, to like, oh, now I'm going to do this on a bigger stage. I'm going to do this in TV and film. I'm going to do this on Broadway.
Yeah.
But for me, I discovered performance as a child actor. Like, so immediately, like my earliest memories of, you know, theater or auditioning are also some of my earliest conscious memories.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So I never felt separate from culture. I had the opposite. I was just waiting for the phone to ring for me to go be in a movie. You know, I was always like, I had that delusion from day one. But I will say, I combed through the memories.
Yes.
And I did pick one that is, it wasn't necessarily the only moment, but it was one of many. And it's curated specifically for the girls here.
Oh, my God.
We love a curation station.
You're welcome. In elementary school, I, like everyone here, I loved the Spice Girls. They were my everything. They were my all. It sounds insane to say this because it really makes me feel 100 years old, but I had their, I can't remember what the album was called, but I had it on a track. I had it on a tape.
Spice.
Spice World.
It was white with the colors. Yeah. And the letters. Oh my gosh. And I loved it so much that I actually had a little, I guess you could call it a cover band. and we were called the Spice Kids, and we would perform Spice Girls tracks exclusively on the wood chips during recess. So on like the, you know, and the moment, the specific moment where I was like, started to see the pieces come together. You know, it's that meme where like, Kira Sedgwick is looking around, or whoever it is, looking around, and all the numbers flying around their head.
It's a woman who looks like Kira Sedgwick, yes.
Yes, yes.
She does resemble Kira Sedgwick. We call her Numbers Woman.
Numbers Woman.
Yes,
it's
Numbers
Woman. It's rule of culture number 98. Oh! Numbers Woman resembles Kira Sedgwick.
And I was seeing sort of like the behind the scenes. So they have this performance Do you remember the song Naked?
Oh, we talk about this all the time.
Istanbul, where they're nude behind the chairs.
Behind the chairs, backwards chairs. Yeah, this is one of the most iconic moments in culture. It's actually a very, very formative. And is this on the list? I don't think
it's
this is on the list.
It's not on the list, but
Spice
World, the album and the film is in the top 50. Go on, Clark.
Yes, and so the lights are out. You see nothing. You see the silhouettes of these women who we love come out, and you see that there's something going on, but you don't know what it is. They sit behind the chairs. The lights come up. They drop the towels.
Yep.
And they're quote unquote naked behind the chairs that they're sitting in backwards. Okay. The reason why I say this is the moment that I knew culture was for me.
God, I already love this.
Is because even as a 6-year old, when I was watching that, I immediately was like, okay, I know they're not naked. Because it would be illegal. It would be lewd. It would be, right?
So they lewd have and to crude. Have, it would be lewd and crude and rude.
Right? So they have to have something going on there. There's some sort of production element here. And they have successfully created the illusion of nudity.
Magic. Yeah.
Right?
Movie magic.
And,
we love.
And that's what it all is, right? That's as any actor is, you know that you're creating an illusion that is experienced in the viewer. It's not real. It's this magic trick. And I, this is actually why my cover band became banned, B-A-N-N-E-D.
So you did not get nude.
Because I was like, we can't. But I attempted to recreate that moment on the wood chips.
with on the my, wood chips? Oh my God, title of app.
On the wood chips.
With my two... my second lead vocalist and third lead vocalist.
Hello.
Because there were only three of us in the Spice Kids. and I kept trying to, I just remember being 6 or 7 years old and thinking like, okay, it's about a 30-second walk from the closest bathroom to our stage. So how are we going to get there without revealing? We don't have, we don't have a backstage. We don't have, it's all open. It's all open air. And also, this is we're in the round. So how are we going to create the illusion of nudity for the people behind us as well as the people beside and in front of us?
You just can't do it.
And I enlisted the help of the teachers because I was like, how do I figure out this moment? And
you were like a young child being like, how do I do a nude illusion in the round?
Yes.
And these adults are
nude
like,
nude illusion in the round is title of app.
Nude illusion in the round.
And I was like, how do I figure this out? And they were like, okay, honey, I think you've taken this a little too far. We're going to have to stop. We're going to have to ask you to stop. Also, she said to me, a number of the other students are jealous because they aren't in the band. And, there's sort of an exclusivity thing happening here. So we're going to have to, it's been a great run. But we're gonna have to end the Spice Kids.
Wow. Okay. So,
were you silent, or were you silenced?
For sure.
The latter. Oh my God.
Wait. And I should also round out the story. The other two girls. I don't remember one of them, which I feel so bad. It's such a Michelle Williams situation.
Uh oh.
But my second lead vocalist was actually a woman by the name of. Now her name is Dr. Alicia Kramer, and she is married to U.S. Senator John Ossoff.
What?
Oh my God.
So let me tell
Georgia
you.
Georgia royalty.
I knew he could put it down. I knew it. From the second I saw him, I was like, he can put it down. I know it. I know he gets real sweet and sensitive and seductive
and
sexy.
I bet he's married to a former Spice Kid.
Who now goes by the name Dr.
Alicia Kramer.
Kramer.
The one and only.
Now, what? So basically, you had three girls in the Spice Kids.
Mm-hmm.
You understand there is famously five. So did you have identities similar to famously the Spice Girls were sort of, you understand, baby, posh, sporty, scary, and ginger? Explain that.
We did. So... the way that I worked around it, because you have to understand, Matt and Bowen, not everyone was talented enough to be in the Spice Kids. And this is partially, this is why we had to cap it at three. Because there wasn't, we weren't going to dull ourselves, water it down to have 100%. A fourth and a fifth just to be, true to the original.
That's why you cut LaToya and Latavia, okay?
I wasn't going to say it, but...
Well,
anti-inclusion icon, Clark Moore.
Exclusive from the beginning.
Okay? Yes.
So I said to the girls, I said, we can...
I said
you can
to
do
the girls, I said... So I said to the girls, I said,
we can do whatever you want. You know, if you want to have a name, if you want to pick a name, you can combine a name. I will allow y'all to choose. The only thing that I know for sure is that I am Baby. And so I went by Baby Boy. I didn't go by Baby Spice. I went by Baby Boy.
Baby Boy.
Wow. And then I don't remember what the other girls chose, but I specifically remember Baby Boy. And I remember having a little lollipop.
Ah, like Emma.
And being a little cheeky six-year-old. Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the deal. I think as adults, we can all say, like, I identify with a certain Spice Girl now. Like, I genuinely identify on this day of all days in my life with, like, more of a Scary Spice energy. I identify with more of a sort of Ginger Spice rising. Mm-hmm, and I think that Posh lives inside me. But there's something about being a kid. Like, I don't think there were a lot of kids looking at the Spice Girls and not saying, I'm Baby.
I'm Baby.
Like, everyone Baby was... Everyone wanted to be a Baby.
Yes. That's why I had to claim it.
Okay.
From the beginning.
And not to keep digging into this bit, but you are gatekeeping, girl bossing the house down. No, I love this.
Gatekeeping and girl bossing, another front runner for title event. So shocking to have three. Wow.
So then who were Alicia and the other one? What were their identities?
Dr. Alicia, fool.
I want to say Dr. Kramer was sporty because she was always very athletic. And I do vaguely remember that. And I can't for the life of me remember that third girl.
Oh my God. Watch this girl be like Elizabeth Olsen or someone. Right.
Yeah, truly a superstar. Honestly, it's so crazy that she went on to real John Ossoff marrying and Dr. Success.
She did. Because then from elementary school, we all continued through the same, we switched from that elementary school to a different one and then all went to junior high and high school together. I don't mean to put the senator's business out in the streets, but...
No, do it. We've all seen those old musical theater videos. Come on, not much left to hide after that.
Dr. Kramer and I actually were first and second chair cellists in the orchestra together while their romance was beginning. And so literally while we were like playing cello together, I was getting the tea about this hot upperclassman that she was dating. And who was named Jonathan at the time. And he always sort of had like a senatorial air
to
him. You know, he was always very... And then he went off to... he's actually connected to my professional trajectory, weirdly, in that he went off to Georgetown and was in an a cappella group there, the Georgetown Chimes.
And you were a cappella boy at Dartmouth?
At Dartmouth, because I decided to go into a cappella. I kind of probably was always going to do a cappella. I've always had a cappella energy.
Uh-huh.
But part of the reason why I decided to do it is because he brought the Chimes back to Atlanta, to our school, Paideia, and they taught us all these songs. So I now randomly know all these Georgetown fight songs.
Oh my gosh.
And then I decided to go off to Dartmouth and join the Dartmouth Airs, and then the Airs... Bringing it all the way back around to reality television show, we competed on the sing-off.
Oh my God, you did not.
We were runners-up to Pentatonix.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I forget that's where Pentatonix comes from.
That's where Pentatonix comes from.
And so that was my like introduction to Los Angeles. It was my first time working on a lot. We shot on the Sony lot right down the street in Culver City. And it was, yeah. So then I guess I owe the senator my career.
Wait, this is a wild little...
That is cool.
Connection.
Isn't that great?
That's great.
But I have one thing. You were about to say something about Elizabeth Olsen.
I thought, when you said Elizabeth Olsen, I thought you meant Elizabeth Holmes. And so I was about to make a joke that she went off to commit fraud. And that's why I was distancing myself from her because of the Theranos.
Because of the Theranos thing.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
I think... We still have to talk about Spice Girls
Yeah.
just for a second. I think there's endless there's endless conversations to be had about the impact. Were we kids? Were we all kids who like read liner notes? Like nothing had like captured me in such a way. Well, first of all, I want to say, Clark, I watched The Naked Performance as a child around that same age, and I was not showbiz savvy enough to be like, that's fake. I was like, they're actually naked. their breasts are touching the chair.
They were certainly in a believable state of undress, Bowen. I would not shame yourself for that one. There was movie magic happening, and movie magic is some of the most powerful magic. It's chaos magic.
It's chaos Wanda. Magic, Wanda.
It's chaos magic, understand. Wanda.
Truly.
And that makes you the Scarlet
Witch. The Scarlet Witch. Or the ginger spice, if you understand the sort of comparison.
Ginger is Wanda.
Was she the leader? Let's decide it. And did they end after she left?
It was sad. It was really, that was
heartbreaking.
My first sort of understanding of mortality in a way.
or something being finite.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, the good times don't last forever. They don't.
They don't. They really don't. And it felt like it would. And also the fact that it was a choice and such a conscious choice made me feel a little bit betrayed.
Betrayed, yeah.
You know, and that was sort of my introduction to heartbreak in a way.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I that actually tracks so, so neatly. I was heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
Heartbroken. Not easy. And it really was this thing of like, when like, you know, Goodbye or Forever came out, I was like, oh, this is my first real understanding up close of what, like, thinking like, no, it's not the same. It's not the same.
It's
something
not the
is
same.
Lost. Something is lost here. And to answer Matt's question, was Ginger the leader? I don't think she was. My relationship at the time with the Spice Girls was that it's beautiful. It's a group. It's girl power. It's all five of them being on the same level, same footing, not vocally even, but somehow they're each essential.
Yeah.
And it kind of still affirms the fact that once Ginger left, it still didn't hold up.
No. Mm-hmm. You know, it's exactly what you're saying. It's like, because there wasn't a leader, and like it felt like a limb was missing, and they could not perform at the same way. Mm. Like it was just all about the five of them. Remember when they were saying feminism before everyone else, like in a mainstream way, like, and that was her. That was like her thing. She was the one wearing the Union Jack. You know what I mean? Like, she was so much of the visual identity of the group that for her to leave, I think that's why I ask, was she the leader? Because she is so strongly identifiable. Like, the way she sang, that wasn't really singing. You know what I mean? I'm doing that with my nose splint on, but you know what I'm saying. Like, she was so...
I think it's helping, yeah.
She was so visually and sonically what that group was. That's why I think she gets confused as being the leader sometimes. She was just as much a part of it as anyone else.
There's a really great video on YouTube. I want to say it's a Vogue interview with Jerry.
Where she's slipping through her looks?
Yes, yes. And she talks about the dress. She talks about the creation of the Union Jack dress and basically how it was an accident, and sort of puts interesting context to what was obviously an insane... I mean, it was only a year. It was only, right? Like 1 year, maybe almost two, was the entire experience of the Spice Girls, like...
2 or 3 years. 97, 98, or 96, 97? Yeah.
It was hard and fast.
It was. And that, in looking back on that, especially, you know, time obviously was processed differently by us then, being 6 and 7 than now, but it felt like forever. It did not feel like 1 year. It felt like 10. I just think about, like, especially in the context of, like, saying culture is for me, or wanting to be a contributor to it, or being a part of it, it speaks to the overwhelming element of a public life, of fame of any kind, of notoriety of any kind. And how do you surf the wave when it's a tsunami, you know? And yet they were pulling out every single moment in that full year and a half, 2 years was I hate to use this word because it's so overused, but it was an iconic moment. The dress, the shoes, the hair, the looks, the songs, the movie.
Ubiquity.
The album that they recorded while they were shooting the movie. You know, like, it was just... And to quote the iceberg What was it? 12 songs, no skips. Everything was a banger. Everything they released was amazing.
And, oh my God.
I want a man, not a boy who thinks he can.
And then the iconic boy who thinks he can. I cannot do it right now, you guys. If you saw me, you would understand.
It was gorgeous. But you're right, Clark.
That my mother just gave me a dirty look.
They achieved a kind of fame that distorted time. Because we brought up the same idea when we talked about Britney after the Britney doc came out. But Britney's whole ascension was like in like a 3 to 4 year span too. Not 3 to 4 years, but like up until like Blackout, when like things just sort of like reached a hilt. It was like what, like 1999 to 2006. 4, 5, 6, 7. I can't even do the math right now, but you know what I'm saying? Like a short amount of time.
She had been around for like 6 years and then she needed like a major reinvention. Like In the Zone was like what I think they would consider it a major reinvention for her.
Right.
Like,
right.
Cause she did the first three albums. It was like Baby One More Time, Oops, I Did It Again, Britney. But she had those three albums and then she needed to go away for like what was an unheard of at the time, like 8 months.
Prepare
a different identity, and it was In the Zone, which then came out and like was like a major change for her. But that the fact that that needed to happen because it was so much in succession. Yeah, it's like that ubiquity we were talking about.
But for the Spice Girls, it was like it felt like a full textured career that only lasted 2-3 years.
Yes,
insane.
And also at the time, it being like, again, like we talk about, like they were truly famous. Everyone knew who they were. Nowadays, it's like, you know, people are upset that this is like happening now with Little Mix. Like Little Mix, their fame has been spread out for literally 10 years. It's been like a decade since they did the X Factor in the UK. Yeah, they are a huge band, but they actually stuck around for way longer and like, they're the most quote unquote successful girl group in the world. Like, and guaranteed, like, I would go as far as to say 7 out of 10 people in America might not even know who they are.
Oh, totally.
Whereas the Spice Girls, it was like, if you didn't know who they were, you must have been dead, darling.
They were compared to, I mean, they were disdainfully so because, you know, the Beatles are held in high regard, but they were compared to that level of fame and that sort of insanity. We were also the target demographic for it, but it did seem like beyond that there were people who at least were aware. You couldn't escape it. They were everywhere.
Right. Favorite Spice Girls song?
I was gonna say rank them.
Rank the songs?
Rank the girls. Okay.
Rank the girls. Oh my God.
I can rank the girls. I can't rank the songs.
Well, rank the girls first and then top three songs unranked.
Okay. Number one is, of course, Baby, because of all the reasons we said. And because I will always have a, you know, she started my career. I owe my career to her.
She really
did.
That's true. Baby Spice and John Ossoff. And I guess Scary. I will say, you know, in the context of identity and race and the things that I talk about on my podcast, I did have a little bit of the, like, you're the black person, so you have to be scary.
Right, of course.
And so I sort of brushed up against that a lot when I was younger. And I think I overcorrected when I was younger in not wanting to identify with Scary only because of our race.
Right.
But I think now she is definitely up there. Of course, Jerry. I think right in the middle, Jerry.
Okay, that's bold.
And that's bold. Posh. right after Miss Beckham, who I have a screenshot of David Beckham's Instagram story when he and presumably Posh watched Love, Simon together in their screening room in their house.
I loved Love, Simon. I thought it was an amazing film.
I loved Ethan so much.
He was a great character that I laughed at and cried at.
I love that
with my beautiful children after my husband and I went and had sex all night. I never sleep.
And then you're going to rank Sporty last?
Yeah.
Looks like it.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. All right. Now,
the vocals just don't matter to you.
The vocals don't.
It was more that, like, her, they all had a shtick, and her shtick wasn't as, it was, I was sort of like.
You weren't responding to it. You weren't
really, girl, you're going to wear sweatpants on stage.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
That's your look is going to be tracksuit.
Uh-huh.
She was coming for the tomboys, and there's not a tomboy here.
She's very ahead of her time.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's the great thing about them is that they spoke to everyone. I'm not in that demographic, but there were plenty of people in Sporty's demographic.
Of course. Okay, so now three tracks that you find to be the most essential Spice Girls songs. I think I have them.
So do y'all want to go? Do you want me to go first?
I can go first. I can go first.
Okay.
Wannabe, obviously.
Gotta have it.
And then I'm going to say... said just for why am I forgetting this song?
To become one,
Wannabe, To Become One, and I'm gonna say, Who Do You Think You Are? Those are the three.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I would say Wannabe and To Become One, and I would remove Who Do You Think You Are, and I would put in Spice Up Your Life, because I just get so hype when the drums start in the beginning and the la 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 la.
And speaking of culture, when they were surfing black cabs at the
Olympics.
Olympics.
Yes, yes.
That was iconic.
That was iconic.
And all five came back. It was catharsis for everyone to see all five of them back, because it was the last goddamn time, because Victoria is too busy slaying it in the fashion world. Have you seen her Vogue 73 questions? It's a must watch.
It's comedy. It's comedy.
It's pure comedy.
Her summer dress. She said, I'm channeling Scary in my summer dress, a perfect summer dress. She posted that on her Instagram the other day. It was very cute. You can buy the dress.
They ask her if she wants to act, and she goes, what does she say? She says, I starred in Spice World, and I'm still waiting for my Outstanding Achievement Award.
And then they
ask, like, what disease would you get rid of right now if you could? And she just, without missing a beat, goes, AIDS.
But the force with which she says, the conviction with which she says,
AIDS.
Amazing.
And she also, there's a moment where she goes, they're like, why don't you ever smile? And she goes, I just tell people I'm smiling on the inside. Icon.
Clark, she's it is so time. Good. It is time for your three Spice Girls tracks.
We gave you a breath.
Okay. So number one for me is To Become One. And the reason why is, it's actually connected with a power move that I like to employ as a guest at a wedding.
Ooh.
I always sing at weddings.
Okay, Icon.
He's a vocalist. Icon.
Specifically when I've either not been asked or expressly asked not to sing.
Wow, you're the guy with the guitar, but you don't have the guitar.
Exactly. And
you have the vocals.
I do is I locate, let me tell you, anyone who wants to do this, I locate the queen with the headset, because that's the wedding planner, as we learned from, the wedding planner, famously starring Jennifer Lopez.
Very famously.
And I sidle up and I do my little gay best friend, hey girl.
Hey.
You know?
Drop in.
And I'm like, so my gift to the bride and the groom, they don't know this. It's a secret. It's a surprise. Can you help me? I enlist her.
Oh, my God.
And then I sort of like find my way to the band. I find my way to whatever. And then ideally, they have no idea what's coming. The music starts. And then boom, there I am. I sing To Become One. It's the perfect wedding song.
Forever dream of you and me together. Say you believe it.
It's a beautiful song.
It's
a beautiful song.
We sang it. We sang it with Catherine and Pat at Seek Treatment Live. We sang it too, Ben.
Which lyrics did you do?
Well, Bowen and I were singing, and Pat and Kat were dancing.
We
like to sing the same thing at the same time.
Okay.
No, but we split up the verse.
Did you do the first beginning?
No. I mean specifically, did you do boys and girls look good together?
Or
Love will lead us back together.
Together.
There's I can't remember what it
is. I think we did Boys and Girls lyric. Look Good Together.
Okay. There's an all-inclusive lyric there that you can do.
Right. Love that they that they did that over time, but I think we did the text as written. I mean, we love the call to condom use in that song. Be a little bit wiser, baby. Put it on. Put it on.
Yeah.
That was maybe, I think, Baby's most iconic moment when she would sing the pre-choruses and say,
oh, yeah. But that that music video is New York culture. Because it was the first time I was like seeing, like, besides like Troll in Central Park or whatever, it was it was like these beautiful shots of Times Square and the Twin Towers and like the Brooklyn Bridge. I was like that place seems like the most beautiful place in the world. And it made me like,
it is.
And it
and it is. It really is. Oh, honey. Oh, New York City.
Frank Sinatra, Eat Your Heart Out. The quintessential New York musical moment is To Become One. Fucking Posh Spice. Oh, no, I don't know if it's Posh or Scary, but in, by the courthouse. Like,
oh, yeah. Just,
like City Hall. Not even City Hall, the courthouse.
Yeah, just amazing. At the courthouse. Honestly, a very good video. They had good videos too.
Great videos. And,
What's that? Say You'll Be There. That was like pretty iconic. Because Wannabe was like, as a music video, it is iconic, but you can tell this is when they had no budget. And then after that song was a huge smash, like then they got a budget and got their
videos
together.
We're going to go to the desert.
They were going to say, we could pay for a truck now to take the girls out to the desert. We can pay for a 12-pack of water bottles for the girls.
We got a water budget.
We got a water budget. Now,
so then number two, close second is Naked, of course. Close second is Naked.
You're okay, great.
It's like they're basically tied, but the only reason why To Become One is higher is because I perform it at weddings when not asked.
Yes.
And then last is Wannabe, and specifically the video. And they're in the house and they're up and down the stairs and they're right in the camera.
It's a hotel in London that I think you can go to.
Is it?
Yeah. I will say, those are excellent choices. I'm going to challenge my sister. I'm not going to challenge my sister. I'm just going to say, spice up your life. I want to love it so badly. Too chaotic.
See, I think I like the chaos of it, especially because like they didn't really have a bigger song after that. I felt like they gave you everything in that one big last song. But you know, it is a little, once you got into the whatever is happening there, it was like a little crazy.
Sometimes I'm not in the mood to be like shaken awake like that. There's value to it, of course, but I would even, yes, this was not as big of a hit as the other stuff, but I'm sooner listening to Holler off of Forever.
Holler. Oh, wow.
Excellent song. Excellent song. Just the four of them. Wonderful.
Did anyone say, stop right now?
We didn't.
Thank
none of us
you
said
very
stop.
Much.
That it was became, a good one, too. It was so like, that was everyone's bit for, you know what I mean? Anytime anyone said stop, it was like, oh, it's going to come.
You're
you know?
Right. It was that. For a while, it was Diana. It was the Supremes. Mm-hmm. And then when that song came, like they'd be like, stop in the name of love. But then Stop came out. And everyone would break into the song if the word stop managed to make it into the conversation.
It was awful.
The 90s were a crazy time.
Truly.
Before we move on from Spice Girls, I do want to know everyone's favorite comedic or dramatic moment from the Spice World film. And I also would like to reach out to all the readers who perchance might know a way we can watch the Spice World film, because like Alaska said on this program, Las Culturistas, and her I Don't Think So, Honey, you cannot get this film. So someone find a way to get us this film. Please, you'd be our favorite reader. But what is your favorite comedic or dramatic moment from Spice World?
For me, it's the reveal, sort of in like a Doctor Who TARDIS way, that the inside of the bus is bigger than the outside.
Yes.
When they walk in and somehow magically they walk into a studio set, the soundstage that is somehow also on wheels in a double-decker bus.
Yes.
Yes.
Beautiful fantasy.
That's it for me.
I really bought it. I thought it was real. And I was an idiot.
it's like me with the Naked performance. I'm like,
exactly. Okay, it was exactly like that. And that's what made us sisters at a very young age.
We were both idiots.
And destined to be friends.
I think I've said in the past, because it is not available just to watch anywhere, I've only seen it one or two times.
Oh, Bowen, it would be your favorite film. It would be your favorite film.
But the moment that stands out to me, that just screamed at me in the most beautiful way, at the most beautiful frequency as a child, was when Elton John shows up out of nowhere and they all freak out and they're like, Elton! And I'm like, and that was the moment where I was like, these girls are so powerful. I was like, these girls know Elton John. They are so powerful. And I will do whatever they say. And so that's the moment. It was a flex. So that's neither a comedic nor a dramatic moment, but it was a moment that really was like, it was like a moment of crossover culture. It was a moment of like pre-Avengers, pre-Kingdom Hearts, LOL, pre-whatever, me being like, wow, worlds can collide. I mean, these are real people, but in terms of that movie being the container for them to cross paths, I go, oh my God, this, I've never seen anything like this.
Mm-hmm. My favorite moment in the film is famously Posh. When they are doing the obstacle course and the four of them are going through the obstacle course and you just see like all of a sudden Victoria Beckham just walking, Victoria Adams at the time, Posh Spice, just walking around the obstacle course in her heels. And this is what she's going to do for the obstacle course. She's not going to do it. She just struts alongside it while the other girls like do it. It's so funny. It's hilarious. And then there's another scene later where they're in the hospital and they're waiting for their friends to give birth, which is like the plot of the movie, like their friends giving birth. They have to do a concert, but they want to be there for her. So like they're all in the hospital and Jerry goes, I spy with my little eye something blue. And one of them goes, hospital. And Posh Spice just goes, shut up, Jerry. And that's why she's due her Outstanding Achievement Award.
And from what awards body, we don't know, but we just know that the award is called Outstanding Achievement Award.
Give her her awards.
It's Real Culture number 15. Posh Spice is due her Outstanding Achievement Award.
Her Outstanding Achievement Award. Oh my God. Spice World.
Oh my gosh.
I just want to thank Clark for giving us the gift to talk about the Spice Girls, in itself a bomb.
You're welcome.
Truly. I mean, it was a gift. The gift of Spice.
The gift of Spice.
The gift of Spice.
And Sisterhood.
Spice and Sisterhood. Another frontrunner for title of app. It's
before
so crazy.
We go into I Don't Think So, Honey, because I feel it coming.
Yes.
Yeah, you can feel it.
Yes. I brought another gift for the two of you.
What?
Which is a story that I have never told anyone. And I don't know how I made it through my press campaign without saying this story about Love, Simon a couple years ago, but it is an exclusive behind the scenes.
Okay.
Again, specifically curated for the readers. When we were shooting the film, which we don't need to name, I can just call it the film.
The film.
So my scene, the big principal's office scene, right? The two of us were sitting there. I get my moment. I get my, like, this is us. Let me tell you a story monologue moment.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Greg Berlanti, our director, at the end, we did a couple of takes of it. And he was like, I want you to, like, sort of, you know, feel free to add anything in you want. You know, if you want to improv something, if you want to add, like, a button or if you want to add whatever. And I was like, okay, what could I possibly add? So then the next time we did I think after like take two or three, at the end of the monologue, right before we're called into the office, I looked at Nick Robinson and I said these words, which were unfortunately cut from the film. I said, welcome to the sisterhood.
They cut it?
They cut that?
And I said it a million times. We did it in a bunch of takes. And and there were other pieces that were cut as well. And I totally also get that it might not have been the right vibe for the... Like, whatever. I think they did a great job. I wanted to share it with y'all and with the readers because I feel like it was one of those, like, behind-the-scenes little tidbits that maybe can make the experience... just a little bit more special for any of the true heads. You know, everyone doesn't need to 100%. Have the welcome to the sisterhood moment.
Yeah,
but for my sisters, for my community, I tried to shoehorn Welcome to the Sisterhood in, and I knew y'all would appreciate that, so I wanted to share that story.
We do. And, you know, I actually, like, when Love, Simon came out, I think a lot of queer people were being a little hard on it because, like, it was this very commercial, like, very much trying to be a movie about a gay kid for straight people. And I think that that's okay. You know what I mean? Like, I would rather see that than the millionth version of, you know, Paper Kites or whatever the hell it is. Like, whatever movie that would get that budget, like, I'm happy there's a Love, Simon. You know what I mean? Like, of course, like, is it extremely white? Yes. Like, is it very much about someone with a lot of privilege? Yes.
It does not strip that. None of those things strip it of its value in a way.
Right. And I think, like, it's fucking great that you said that. Am I surprised they cut it? No. Because I think that probably they were trying to juggle things in their head about how the straight audience that was watching it would respond to something like Welcome to the Sisterhood. Like, because that line is going to make some dad in the audience say, oh, so it's what I thought, he's a woman now. You know what I mean? Like, and it's just like, just to walk people through that, like, I get why they cut it, but I also 100% understand and appreciate that you said it. That's like...
And thank you for telling us.
Yeah.
Of course, I shared it just for you all these years. Oh, I'm waiting to tell you the story.
Well, you were so memorable in that movie, and thank like, you. We loved it, and we're just so happy that you're here. Now we're going to have a moment of catharsis, Molly. What is it that we do?
We do a segment called I Don't Think So, Honey. Ooh. We take 1 minute to go off on something in culture. It's really chapping our limbs.
Our asses and our limbs.
Our asses, which are a terminus of our legs. The legs end and start at the ass.
People don't talk about that, but your ass is really what your legs become. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a butt guy, I'm putting this in quotes, you're really a leg freak.
Because guess what? Your legs end where the ass cracks.
Oh.
Rule of culture, number 9.
Read a book, bitch. Read a book. Rule of culture, number 9.
Number 9.
Your legs.
Legs end.
End. Where your ass cracks.
Can't wait to see that one
illustrated. Read a book, bitch.
Matt, do you have something?
You know, I think I do.
Okay. Oh.
I think I do.
I hear some conviction. I can't wait to hear this. This is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
Girl, I Don't Think So, Honey, American Idol this season. I turned it on last night because I am very much convalescing. And I think my mother, who's sitting right here to my left, can agree. There's not one good person on that. Some people were like, oh, some of the girls are good. And I was watching it and I'm like, yeah, I get that there's good singing happening. But like, where is the star quality on this program? I couldn't find it. So basically, the judges are Katy Perry, Luke Bryant, who just announced today he has COVID. He's a celebrity in LA.
30 seconds.
On April 12th, 2021, who's contracting COVID. I don't know how you do that, but he did. And Lionel Richie. And they stand up and applaud for everyone. And I'm like, girl, where is the critique? Also, they have them perform right after they've figured out they made it into the finals. And so it's like they're so shaky and freaked out because they just found out they made it and they sound pitchy. I Don't Think So, Honey. If you're going to do American Idol, do one more season. Bring back the original three. Simon, Paul, and Randy. Let's go out with a bang. Kill it. Take it out back.
That's 1 minute. Take it out back. Kill it.
The Voice has surpassed it. Paula is going to fill in for Luke Bryan, who, again, I'll say, is on April 12th, 2021, in the pandemic, a celebrity in LA who contracted the coronavirus. I don't know how that happens.
let's not stigmatize getting the virus in some late or middle stage.
I'm just saying he's very protected citizen.
Yes. Yes. You're right. That is true.
But, girl, I mean, American Idol is a flop, right, Mom?
Not good. Damn bird.
Not. What'd she say?
Not good. Damn bird.
Not good, damn bird.
She threw her catchphrase in there.
She knows the assignment. She understands the assignment.
That's good branding.
That's oh, great she's a branding. Great brander. Oh, she understands that, to be sure.
You know, mm-hmm. we just watched the branding challenge of Drag Race.
Ooh,
a pointless yeah. episode. Oh no, they're oh the sodas,
the soda pops. Whose soda the pop did you think was the best, Mom? You liked Simone's.
Simone's with some and Simone won.
Everybody's got a sweet tooth. Remember that one?
Yeah, and Rosé's was good.
Rosé's was good. My mom loves mm-hmm. Rosé, and I have loves to say, Rosé. In rewatching the season, I think people, you know, I think that especially people in New York who know Rosé, I think who are just used to how good Rosé is, are being hard on Rosé. I think Rosé could win.
Oh, the Gen Zers love her.
The Gen Zers love Rosé.
This is what I've heard. Is that she's getting a lot of like a lot of the God on my Discover page on my Instagram is like full of like Drag Race metrics,
right,
and analytics, and like I'm seeing a lot of stuff like the top four. Sorry, Clark, this is fully alienating.
No, I mean it's wild. Gen Z loving something is it makes me nervous.
It's fascinating. Yes. Well, it's just like they love Rosé, and like Rosé is overwhelmingly winning like the polling, quote unquote. Not that it matters, but like in the end, because it's Ru's choice to make. Of course,
you got to win the Ru polling.
You got. Oh my God!
The way I turn that.
The way you turn that, but Rue, but sorry, Gen Zers love Rosé. They love Rosé.
So interesting. You think that they would go for Gottmik?
Gottmik, but and they do also love Gottmik. But there's a pretty big margin, or difference between Rosé and Gottmik.
Muy interesante.
I've decided just now I'm gonna be real with mine. I'm gonna be a little real.
Okay.
Because you know what it is. Clark just inspired me. He shared something that he did not share on the press tour for Love, Simon. He got me to open up in a way that I would have never opened up to, like, a professional journalist.
Right.
And I'm about to open up in a way that I would only tell my sisters.
All right. Well, you heard it here first. We're getting raw and real. And it's Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Any language around any cast member on SNL right now saying blank stole the show. Blank is carrying the show on their backs. No, that erases the work of, let's say, 19 other people on that cast. This is the biggest cast the show has ever had. It's crazy. It's weird to navigate. Everyone is doing their best. Everyone is so ungodly talented in ways that no one in the audience can begin to understand. Internally, this is the vibe. We are all acknowledging each other's work ethic and humor and different points of view and sensibilities. And it's a beautiful, beautiful coexistence. And we all appreciate each other. And this is I can't believe this season of television that I have weirdly been a part of. Coincidentally, I'm like, how the fuck did we get through this season? We're all doing our best, and we are all so, so fucking funny that it's crazy to me to even suggest that it's an individual thing and not a collective thing that, like, maybe the quality of the show is slightly different than it was in the past, or it's goofier. I'm sorry, I'm totally running the clock at this point, but it's like, it really bugs me when it's like, Bowen, yes! I'm using myself as an example because I've just been inundated with a little bit too much positive feedback. But I'm just like, no, you guys don't get it. This is like every single person on this show right now is so fucking good at this. That's all.
It takes a village too.
That's all. And I don't mean to like signal anything beyond on a meta level of like, I truly believe this in my heart. I go, wow, like I can't believe what goes on at the show, like, and the heartbreak that goes into like the creative process when things like don't come to term or whatever. I'm just like, y'all, like it's not quite as like it's survivorship bias. It's like you're only seeing the stuff that makes it onto the show. You're not seeing the stuff that didn't make it, that like is just as, I don't know, great, wonderful, funny. Anyway,
I think that's just it. A way that people, that's one mode of people expressing themselves.
Of course.
Is to sort of like in lifting one thing up, put down another thing. I mean, I know it happens.
Yes,
so
exactly.
It's like it. But I also think like is what you're saying is true, that like you know,
but it feels zero sum. It feels like, what? No, just
yeah. But also, like, anyway, at the very heart of that is everyone being very proud of you and excited for you that you've done so well. But also, you're right. It's
I appreciate that.
That piece and all the pieces don't get made without like a million people working their fucking ass off on it, especially at that show where it's like literally all hands on deck. You know what I mean? It must feel a little weird to get a feedback that's like, if it wasn't for this person, then I wouldn't watch. It's just like, this is crazy.
It's like it's weird, and like and it's a show that engenders a lot of strong opinions because people have associations with it, whether they're very emotional or whether they're like disillusioned by it. And like, I totally get the crowd of people out there who are like, SNL sucks and hasn't been funny. I'm just like, yeah, great. But in terms of a form of praise being packaged in, like, this person is exceptional in this way, I'm like, it's not the exception, though. The rule is that the people who are on that show have some reason to be there, you know, like have some, like, have proven something by virtue of just being on the show itself. Am I like out of line?
I don't think so.
Is that crazy?
No.
Okay. No. I also think this speaks to what I've always felt in terms of like receiving feedback, either positive or negative. It's like, especially the negative, I feel like we're taught how to deal with. We're taught to ignore the comments. We're taught to, you know, process it in whatever way. But the positive can be even more overwhelming.
Sure.
Because what do you do with it? And then because if there's so much of it, or if it's also in a specific way, like, how do you process that? Is it real? You know, if the bad wasn't real, then how can the good be real?
Sure,
like,
exactly.
My mind goes on this whole journey as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can imagine.
Yeah. And it's also very good to be conscious of ego. You know what I mean? Because it's like, that's really, I think, where it gets tripped up, is because, like, what if you were to believe one day that you were the only person to make the show run? Like, that's crazy. So basically,
insane.
It's just like, you know, like it's all, and that's another reason. It's another argument for getting literally offline. And I have to say, I deactivated my Twitter again today.
Well, do you want to know what I did this time? So all the other times I got off Twitter, I deactivated it, but like kept the window open for 12 months.
12 months, yeah.
This time I did it for 30 days. I'm like, I think this is it. I think this is last. This is the last leg.
Commitment.
But yes, commitment. I just want to like just compound what you guys are saying, which is that like, The oversimplified way that I can think of this now is that like you have to examine, question whatever the positive on the same, with the same scrutiny that you would with the negative.
The best advice I've ever gotten was from one of the producers on The Sing Off right towards the end, as she was like, your career is going to go well. You are going in a really positive direction. I believe in you. And she said, the advice that I will give you is, you are never as good or as bad as they say you are.
Yes.
That's so true.
That is how I process all of it. Because the good can be really overwhelming.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also, the other thing too is like, a lot of people, when they say something, they say it in a moment. They're not thinking it all the time. You know what I mean? So it's like something I also think that can happen with social media is like, you know, someone tosses off a mean or positive comment and you think, that person's obsessed with me. It's like, no, they said it in a second.
It's a fleeting thought that like is now like sort of written in ink. Mark Zuckerberg. But yeah, anyway, social network quote. Anyway, oh my God, I got a little vulny. I got real because
Well, that's fine, and we love that.
But it's because Clark is here.
It's because Clark is here. Clark opens the floodgates of Vuln.
It's the Clark effect.
It's the Clark effect. And now we're going to actually experience the Clark effect in rare form as Clark endeavors to complete an I Don't Think So Honey. Clark, the moment is here. Are you ready for it, Taylor Swift?
Definitely not, but I will give it old college try.
Old Dartmouth try. Now, wait, well, before we get this, did you at Dartmouth doing a cappella ever experience the NYU Enharmonics out in the wild?
Of course, yeah. Ali Stroker.
Oh, wow.
we're now represented by the same manager, Rachel Saltzman. Shout out.
Shout out to Saltz.
They did a cover of Billy Ray Was a Preacher's Son.
Yes!
And when a destiny come along.
Mm-hmm. It's an incredible cover of Son
It's
of a
so
Preacher
good.
Man.
Yeah. It's on YouTube. Yeah. It's worth digging into.
This was the riff.
Okay, go.
Being good isn't always easy.
Always easy.
No matter how hard I try. It's a stunning.
I used to love them.
I designed their first like album cover. It's a terrible design. I did a terrible job. I still think to this day about how I did not do them justice. Because
no, I'm sure they loved it. That's why they used it. I also like. I wanted to audition for them so bad, but was busy with Hammercats and wasn't like confident enough to go.
They were way better than we were. They were like.
No.
They were like legit.
Yeah, our charm and our shtick was the sort of like. Good old boy, you know, like mediocre sounding white guy vibe. That was like where we lived.
That was the Dartmouth a cappella vibe. Got it.
Yeah. Deeply.
Whereas NYU and Harms, their thing, I'm not kidding you, was they riff down, they look hot, and they do drugs. That was literally their thing. They can drag me for that, but that was your thing, and I don't care.
That was the thing, and it was like,
it was like
intimidating.
Scary. Yeah, it was like they were like a scary, hot a cappella group.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's time. Clark Moore, your I Don't Think So Honey begins now.
I Don't Think So Honey headaches. Okay. You really are that bitch. You come into my brainscape when I least expect you. You thoroughly ruin my life. You take away my vision. My productivity, my joie de vivre,
speak on it.
My personality, and my general will to live.
Oh.
As the kids say, you are living rent-free in my brain, and bitch, it's time for you to get
30
evicted.
Seconds. Oh,
there are no squatter's rights in my prefrontal cortex, and honey, you are way past due. And girl, you always come up with excuses. You try to blame your existence on anything you can. My dehydration,
15.
My insomnia, the barometric pressure of Venice. Bitch, ooh, it's time you start taking accountability, okay?
Learn.
My Five cerebellum seconds. Is closed to you, headaches. I don't think so, honey. You are not welcome here.
Wow.
That's one minute.
You know, as someone
Thank
who's
you.
Been dealing with a lot of Tylenol extra strength recently, I am with you, sister.
Headaches you're right. Headaches come in and they're like, they're that neighbor that pops by that's like, no reason. Just wanted to, it's like, there's no reason that they should be there. It's like Agatha all along. It's Agnes coming in as just checking in on Wanda.
Yeah. Without the reveal. Without the reveal.
Without the fun reveal. Without the fun reveal of Catherine Hahn.
The reason is actually also chaos magic. That's why we get headaches.
Yeah. They're amongst my least favorite things in the world. I would say headaches, canker sores, coughing fits, common colds. These
when
are things
hurts.
That just don't, when a tooth hurts, darling. These are things that don't need to happen, but often do. what is your pain reliever of choice?
I have some holistic remedies, and I have, of course, you know, ibuprofen. I try to stay away from it though, because I don't like to take Aleve a lot. Aleve, though, I used to take Advil. Apparently, Aleve has a longer half-life, so it lasts longer. But when you were pre-med, you know what just, half-life means.
Yeah, I know exactly what that means. No, does it mean it's more shelf-stable, quote-unquote? Talking about it, it's like a jam.
When it's releasing I think it just like lasts longer
Got it. The
medicine works longer.
You know what's interesting? I was not allowed. I have to be on Tylenol right now because they say that all the other pain relievers, ibuprofen, Advil, etc., they thin your blood.
Blood thinners, yeah. Yeah.
So I didn't know that.
One of the holistic things that actually does work for me is peppermint oil.
Ooh.
And it always has worked for me, both because I think it opens up some pathways. I usually get sinus headaches in the front. Oof. And so the peppermint oil, I put it on my upper lip, on my temples, and then I put it in between how does one describe this? In between the thumb and first index finger. Because this is a pressure point.
We call that the
smash mouth, the L on her forehead. We call that.
Put it in the smash mouth. There's a pressure point there. I also have this little thing that like squeezes. It clips onto my smash mouth and it squeezes the pressure point. And that helps with the headache as well.
Look at that. God. He's healing the readers.
I'm giving you practical advice.
Private practice, a holistic practice in Venice, in Santa Monica, near Santa Monica.
With no accreditation, so please don't sue me.
Listen, I think we are not going to sue.
We're not going to sue. We've kept Clark over time. I rudely had to push this whole thing back once and do it again mere minutes before. We're going to let Clark go, but this was healing.
This was so fun.
Thank you for having me. I love y'all so much. Thank you for being on my show. I'm so glad that we've closed out the loop here.
Yes, yes.
You both have brought such a validation to the pod.
I was going to say validation.
I'm
not even kidding. I think people take it more seriously now. And your two episodes are...
No way. It's all you. It's all you, baby.
They're the most listened to episodes of all. And that is probably for a reason. So thank you guys. And especially Bowen, thank you for doing it before it even existed. You know,
it
could have been literally anything. And you jumped in those early days. So thank you.
It was my pleasure.
Well, we are great fans and great admirers and great friends.
Yes.
Welcome to the sisterhood. Everyone listen to Soul Balm.
Yes, you got to listen to Soul Balm. Just listen to and watch everything that Clark does. I mean, come on. Bowen, we're going to bravely still finish with the song.
Yes.
And I think you know what it is.
I think you know what it is.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son. When his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When he gathered and started talking, that's when Billy would take me walking. Through the backyard, we'd go walking. Then he looked into my eyes. Lord knows, to my surprise, the only one who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man.
A British woman singing like a southern Memphis belle. I love it. Bye.
Bye.